I call the City of Franklin's Common Council to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor.
Here.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm is excused. Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderman Skaransky.
Here.
Please rise, join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I think we're gonna come back to the citizens' comment period, but we have a couple special guests with us tonight. I'd like to say a very good friend of mine, and he's become a very good friend of mine over the years, and has done enormous good for the City of Franklin. And it's high time we recognized him for everything that he's done. So I'd like to call up Jeff Stone. I think everybody knows Jeff, but Jeff has been so good to this community along with Senator Lossick that I thought it important that we formally recognize him for everything that he's done. That's proclamation and recognition of public service of Jeff Stone. Whereas Jeff Stone recently completed nearly 20 years of service to the people as an elected public official, serving as a member of the City of Greenfield County Council from 1994 to 1998, and thereafter serving as the Wisconsin State Assembly representative for the 82nd District from his election in April 1998 until October 14, 2013, upon his appointment from Governor Scott Walker to serve as the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin Water Compliance and Consumer Affairs Division Administrator. And whereas Representative Stone and his state office were always, and I do mean always, there when needed in furtherance of matters of substantial importance for the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Franklin throughout the years, including coordinating state of Wisconsin legislation in conjunction with legislative actions of the City of Franklin Common Council upon subjects which had never been addressed before in law, but were necessary in an ever-changing world, and consistently lent a helping hand to quality development projects, working for state assistance needed to secure such development with public improvements and state funding assistance, which he also worked for upon matters of protecting and preserving the natural environmental lands of Franklin, one of the fastest growing cities in the state of Wisconsin. And during his tenure, and whereas, in addition to his elected offices, Representative Stone also served as a member of the State Legislature, Health Committee, Election and Campaign Reform Committee, Jobs, Economy and Small Business Committee, Transportation Committee, Legislative Council, Special Committee on Local Service Consolidation, Elections and Campaign Finance Reform, Health and Healthcare Reform Committee, Joint Committee on Finance, Legislative Council Special Committee on Airport Authorities, as well as a member of the Wisconsin Center District Board, the University of Wisconsin Hospitals and Clinics Authority, and the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation Board of Directors. And whereas Representative Stone worked above and beyond the call of duty, and I know that firsthand, on behalf of the people he represented, now therefore be it proclaimed that I, Thomas M. Taylor, the Mayor of the City of Franklin of Wisconsin, on behalf of all the 35,000 plus residents of Franklin, hereby recognize and commend the record of Jeff Stone, substantially evidencing his public service to the citizens of the City of Franklin, and wish him well in his continued public service for the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. Presented to the City of Franklin County Council this 31st day of March 2014, signed Thomas M. Taylor, Mayor of the City of Franklin.
Real briefly, it's
nice to be acknowledged for the work that I did as a legislator, but it's truly been a privilege to serve the communities that I've represented. Franklin is a great community, and you know, I'm somebody who moved to Wisconsin, you know, not that much over 20 years ago, and this community has been a great place. It's been very welcoming, and it's been an honor for me to get to do something that I'd love to do for people of this area. And if I had an office anymore, I'd probably give them a clap for this guy too. But thank you all very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, and I guess I'll go down to letters and petitions, and this is kind of awkward for me, so the first person we have on the agenda is City of Franklin Chief of Police Richard Oliva.
How does it feel?
Normal.
Public safety is one of the most important functions, not the most important function of any device to citizens. Public safety has not come easy. It's an effort, and it takes a lot of resources to provide a safe environment to the citizens. And the police department could not do the job it does without the support that Mayor Taylor has provided us over the years. And we greatly appreciate the support, the commitment you gave us allow us to provide the service that the citizens deserve this year. So consequently, I'd like to present you on behalf of our department's plaque, which reads Thomas M. Taylor, Mayor, April 2005 to April 2014, in grateful appreciation for your steadfast support of public safety. Thank you so much.
Your Honor, you might just stay there. I can run this next one here. Item number two we have is the Wisconsin State Legislature citation of congratulation, commendation, and gratitude upon the joint motion of Senator Mary Lozick and Representative Ken Skronsky to Mayor Thomas M. Taylor. I believe there is a presentation as well.
Are you good?
No, you and Mary can present.
It is truly an honor to be here to present a citation to Mayor Tom Taylor, and it's a very bittersweet moment. Tom has just absolutely been a wonderful mayor and a wonderful liaison to the work that I've had to do. I can't say enough good things, and it's a very bittersweet moment because I'm sad to see him leave, but I'm happy that he's going on to something that he's going to enjoy very, very much. So that's wonderful. And the citation, if you know you by these presents, whereas Thomas Taylor is serving the city of Franklin as mayor for 9 years, is retiring. Whereas Thomas Taylor, Franklin resident since 1983, served the city of Franklin as District 5 alderman, chairman of the finance committee, chairman of the personnel committee, chairman of the licensing committee, chairman of the public safety committee, member of the waste siting committee, economic development, technology, facility needs, website, labor negotiation, oversight committee, president of the common council, acting mayor, and served the city, and very well, I must say, the city as well as the greater Milwaukee community, as chairman of the Milwaukee County Intergovernmental Cooperation Council. Whereas Thomas also served as acting director of human resources for Milwaukee County, assistant director of Milwaukee County Department of Labor Relations, member of the long-term planning committee for Milwaukee County, executive board member of Milwaukee District Council 48, AFSCME, vice president and chief steward of Local 82 AFSCME, whereas Thomas Taylor served with dedication and excellent representation to residents of the city of Franklin and administered Franklin city government with respect and dignity. Now, therefore, the members of the Wisconsin Legislature on a joint motion of Senator Mary Lockwood and Representative Ken Speranz congratulates Thomas Taylor upon retirement as mayor of the city of Franklin. Thomas Taylor is further commended and thanked for years of service to the city of Franklin, Milwaukee County, and the state of Wisconsin. And it has our signatures, the treasurer, the senator, the clerk, it's got the official state seal, it's dated this date. And I, as I say, it's a bittersweet moment. I'm honored to be able to present it and wish Mayor Taylor all the best in the future. But I will very, very sincerely miss him. He's been a great shoulder to lean on. So, best wishes.
Your Honor, we have a couple. We have a few more things for you. You mentioned Governor Walker. This next item is the State of Wisconsin Office of the Governor Certificate of Commendation from Governor Scott Walker honoring Mayor Thomas M. Taylor. Mary Lozick will, Senator Lozick will read it into the record.
Okay. So it says honoring Tom Taylor, Mayor, City of Franklin. Whereas Mayor Tom Taylor has been a Franklin resident for 31 years and has been a dedicated and hardworking public servant for the City of Franklin and Milwaukee County. Whereas Mayor Tom Taylor has served his community honorably as the mayor of Franklin for the past 9 years, being elected 3 times, and previously he was an alderman and president of the Common Council, as well as chairman of the Milwaukee County Intergovernmental Cooperation Council. Whereas Mayor Tom Taylor has been successful in economic development, making Franklin one of the fastest growing communities in Wisconsin. Whereas Mayor Tom Taylor has served on a multitude of committees many management initiatives. Now, therefore, I, Scott Walker, Governor of the State of Wisconsin, hereby commend Mayor Tom Taylor for his service to the people of Franklin and wish him well. Done at the Capitol in the City of Madison, the 4th day of March, in the Tennessee. Official seal and signature, that is an original signature of Scott Walker, and I'm pleased to be able to present that. One more we have. Item number 4 is the United States House of Representatives Certificate of Special Congressional Recognition from the United States Congressman Paul Ryan to Mayor Thomas M. Taylor. And this too says, Dear Tom, on behalf of Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, I'm pleased to express my gratitude for your many years of service. I recently learned of your decision, and I wanted to extend my personal congratulations for your successful career of service to our community. Tom, I commend you on your dedication to serving others through your work as the mayor of the city of Franklin. Although you will be greatly missed by members of the community, your efforts will have a lasting and positive influence on their lives. You truly serve as a role model for other community leaders to follow. I sincerely extend all my best wishes to you and your family. Congratulations again on your outstanding service as the mayor of the city of Franklin. Your service is greatly appreciated and will be greatly missed. Sincerely, Paul Ryan, serving Wisconsin's 1st District.
I have something that I just got before the meeting, and it's a very sad moment for me and a very, very happy moment. I haven't actually got the opportunity of reading the letter, but come here, Jack. Those of you that don't know this gentleman on my left, this is the guy they call the unofficial mayor of Franklin. This is Jack Bennett. And he is more than entitled to that description because this is his community. Jack has built this community, literally. The roads, the bridges, the sidewalks, everything is because of Jack Bennett and what he means to this community. Jack asked me to read this, so I will. And this is my first read, but dear Mayor Taylor, after nearly 4.5 decades, Jack's only been with us 45 years, of service to the city of Franklin as city engineer / director of public works, I feel now is the time to retire. I've enjoyed my years of service and have especially enjoyed working with you for the past 8 years. So now you can make me cry. When I was appointed city engineer director of public works by Mayor Favreau in July of 1969, the year I graduated, I had no idea that I would remain in this position as long as I have. I arrived in Franklin at the time that metropolitan sewers became available to the city, and that led to the city's growth. The population of Franklin was 12,000 in 1969 and has tripled in size to nearly 36,000. When I started, Franklin had no sanitary sewer system, no water utility. You see, we've got Fred Climates over there that we can thank for that water utility as well. No garbage collection, no full-time firemen, no library, and the police department operated out of an old farmhouse with police cars housed in an old barn. For my first 20 years, Franklin did not have a planning department, and I served the staff to the planning commission, not only handling the development of the infrastructure, but also reviewing and recommending approval of hundreds of subdivision and development projects. Those were some busy times as Franklin became one of the fastest growing cities in the state. One aspect of the city that makes things work is the excellent staff. Boy, you've got that right, Jack. We have excellent staff that the city has available, including but not limited to assistant city engineer, highway, sewer, and water superintendents, engineering staff, finest municipal city attorney in the country, Jesse. Financial officer, we've got Paul over here. World's greatest clerk, Sandy Winlow. Without these excellent employees, the city could not operate.
You forgot.
Oh, the police chief. Actually, for you, you know, I'm sorry if we're taking some time, but obviously these are heavy matters. For those of you that don't know, our police chief, he's been around here for a while. You may have noticed that crime has not increased while he's been here. He does things very quietly. But when you talk to other law enforcement people, other chiefs, this is their star. This is the guy that they said, Mayor, how in the world did you get that police chief to come here to me? This was supposed to be the police chief for the city of Milwaukee. Their mistake, our reward.
Yep.
Chief Oliva is as good as it comes. And then some. So I guess I missed it a little bit, but I think we covered it. I'd like to thank all present and past elected city officials and board and commission members. Fred, you're here tonight. You know, I think I apologized to you this past summer, and you said why, and I said because I was a brat when I was an alderman. I gave you a tough time, and little did I know the difference between being an alderman and a mayor. And Fred Klimas, who's our great municipal judge, we owe him so much that I don't know that he'd ever be repaid.
The two longest serving?
Oh, really?
Yeah. 14 years.
I have a couple comments during the season coming.
See you in court.
I'd like to thank all present guests, like the city officials, the board, and commission members for whom it has been my pleasure to work with, who are extremely dedicated to putting Franklin first. I have scheduled my last day with the city clerk for June 6, 2014. This lead time should assist the city in planning for my replacement. Yours very truly, John M. Bennett, city engineer. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've ever given a standing ovation,
thank you, everyone. It's really cannot express how proud I am to be the mayor and having been the mayor. And again, Fred, I want to thank you for all the years that you put up with me, and you put up with a lot of things, and you got everything done, and for serving as a mentor to all of us. With that, I'm going to turn back to citizens' comment period. Are there any citizens wishing to speak during the yes?
Fred Clements, 9399 South Cobblestone Way. I don't want to take a lot of time. I'm sure people have other things that they want to talk about. This is kind of a bittersweet day, as you said before. First of all, go Brewers. They won the opening day. Got a great pitching performance from Gallardo and from the bullpen, so we're really happy about that. I've been a lifelong baseball fan, so I come with the joy of that, but also the sadness at seeing two servants, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word, two servants of the city of Franklin who are going to be short-timers now. I do encourage everyone to vote tomorrow. That's very important. I hope everyone will do that, and I just hope that we get whoever the next mayor is, someone that's as dedicated and as hardworking and as committed to the success of the city as Tom Taylor. I don't know if people even know this, but this is a part-time job, or at least it's supposed to be a part-time job. Tom Taylor regularly worked more than 40 hours a week, regularly, for what was supposed to be a part-time job. In addition to being the leader of the city, attending all these meetings, the common council meetings, the planning commission meetings, and all that type of thing. He also served as chair most of the time, most of the years that he was mayor, chair of the Intergovernmental Cooperation Council. This is a meeting of all the mayors and village presidents throughout Milwaukee County. There's been a lot of really difficult, thorny issues that that group has had to address, the biggest one of them probably being the paramedic service throughout the county. I don't think that paramedic contract for the county would have gone through if it hadn't been for the leadership of Tom Taylor. I have not seen a person who is as dedicated, as hardworking, as committed as Tom, other than perhaps Jack Benny. If you ever want a good laugh, and maybe after this long meeting and all these plaques, I think you'll want a good laugh, ask Jack to show you a photograph of his first year that he served as city engineer. And first of all, if you put that photograph in with about four or five others, you would never pick him out because he had long, thick, black hair. It was in the mid-60s, and he had long, black hair that kind of curled at the bottom. He looked like he was the fifth Beatle, and you see that picture and compare him with now. Of course, being a city engineer job is so easy, and so no stress, no problems. Yeah. So no wonder his hair's gotten a little bit white. But anyways, I do mean everything I've said. Tom, you were a great mayor. You were so dedicated. You led the city so well, so responsibly. I think everyone has been so pleased with your service. We're deeply and dearly going to miss you. I certainly agree with your comments about the city attorney and city clerk. We are number one for that. I don't think we could do any better. And, of course, Jack Bennett, you will be greatly missed maybe more than you even realize by people who have gotten to know you and have worked with you and have seen firsthand your dedication to the city. So to the two of you, all I can say, and I served as mayor for 13 years, so I know full well the pressures and how, and I'm sorry, folks, some of you might be for saying this, but I'm going to be blunt with you anyways. When you're up in that seat, or even the alderman for that matter, you're not going to be able to make everybody happy. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Sometimes you have to make tough decisions, and those tough decisions are decisions that don't leave everybody happy. Now, all of us like to be liked. All of us. All of us would like to sit up there and give everybody everything they want. But you can't do it. When you're a leader, sometimes you have to balance, you have to make choices, and you have to do what you think is the right thing. I won't take any more time. I know you've got other things on the agenda tonight, but I just want to say to both of you, Tom Taylor and Jack Bennett, well done, my friends. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Mark, could you do me a favor and just lift up that plaque? I brought it in tonight only because I received this the other day from all the fire chiefs, and it's all the emblems of the fire departments in the 19 municipalities. But it's really your plaque. It was for negotiating the last four EMS paramedic contracts for the 19 municipalities, and I have accumulated a lot of very nice things over my life, but I'll tell you, when you have a negotiating committee that's your representatives are all the fire chiefs, including this guy down here, you want to get a sense of pride, especially when they're all dressed up in their uniforms and they are all American heroes. So I just want to share that with you because that is going on the wall in my den as soon as I can possibly get it there.
Man cave.
The man cave. So, thank you. All right. Anyone else wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Yes, sir.
Mayor Taylor, Casper Green, 3519, West Forest Hill Avenue. Mayor Taylor, I'm going to save you for last. But we have three gentlemen here that I would like to compliment. I've been on the periphery of politics here in Franklin for almost 20 years, as many of you know, when working with the Franklin seniors. And we had help from the mayor, including Judge Clements, who was the mayor at the time. Is this thing off? Is that thing off? Okay.
Yep.
Anyway, we wouldn't have several things here in Franklin for the senior citizen people. If it hadn't been for the mayors and the aldermen that we had at the time when I began working for the senior citizen organization. And Ken Skoronski is the first one I want to attack. Ken and I have been friends for a lot of years. And he was on the council and on several other commissions and boards and so forth during the time that we were on the periphery. And I would like to thank Ken for all the hard work that he has done in behalf of the seniors. And Ken, also, I want you to continue to be a member of the senior citizens, because just because you're going to Madison, don't let that deter you from coming at our winter meetings. John Bennett, I enjoy talking with John, because of the fact that he and I have had a lot of good times together through the years. And John is accessible. He is always willing to sit down and talk and answer questions, and he has done it dozens of times through the years for me, and you know that, John. And Fred Clements, the judge. We probably wouldn't have this meal site for the seniors over through this wall here, Fred, if it hadn't been for you and your leadership at the time. And I really appreciate that. Now, we had Tom Taylor, who was my alderman at the time, who worked right along with you, Fred. I should say Judge Clements. But I know both of you well enough that I don't like to call you by your proper names of mayor. But nevertheless, others that were on the council at the time, you just did a fantastic job for the seniors, and I hope that you continue to help out the senior citizen people in this community, because as those of you who know, in Milwaukee County, we probably have less for our seniors here in Franklin than any other city in Milwaukee County. We have absolutely no bus service, absolutely none. And since I've been a commissioner for the Department on Aging, I have brought that up numerous, numerous times. And Steve Taylor, as the liaison between the board, county board, and Frank, the Commission on Aging, he's heard me say that on several occasions, I'm sure. But anyway, we do need more for the Franklin seniors, and I wish that we could get some people together and convince the county of that, because it seems as though the county officials don't consider Franklin, Oak Creek, other outlying communities in this county as much as they do people towards the inner city. I came here tonight not feeling well, and I hope you but I came on purpose. Mayor Taylor, Tom, you and I have been friends for what? Ever since you became my alderman, which was probably 15 and 18 years ago. And I would like to thank you personally for all the hard work you put in as the 5th District Alderman. And since you've been mayor, I can only reiterate what was said earlier. I know for a fact I've come in here at night several times and seen you at your desk. So you have made a part-time job into a full-time job. And whoever succeeds you is going to have some big shoes to fill. So thank you, Tom, for all your service.
Thank you, Casper.
Dennis McKnight, 9321 South Spring Hill Lane. Mayor Taylor, I know you've heard quite a bit tonight, but I've been serving this community for 16 years, and you're going to hear a little bit more. I am the president of the library board. I'm very proud to say a member of the building committee for the library, and on the library board for 16 years. 14 years ago tomorrow, April 1st, there was another election. That election had a referendum, advisory referendum question. That question was, should the city build a new library on city-owned property at a cost not to exceed $5.8 million? A month, 2 months went by after the referendum was passed by 63%. And we thought, wow, is anybody up there going to make a motion to actually build this thing, even when we have 63% approval? It sat and sat for a month or two. Finally, at a finance committee meeting, an alderman, Tom Taylor, made the motion to build that library. The result, 12 years later, after the building opened, we were shelling out $120,000 a year. Figure it out, times 12 years, it's about $1.5 million. We've taken in pretty close in reciprocal borrowing now in 12 years, about $1 million. $1.5 million out, $1 million in, that's about $2.5 million. It came in at $5.5 million, $300,000 under budget. It's almost halfway paid for, and probably in 25 years, the thing will be paid for. Thank you on behalf of the citizens of Franklin for building that thing, for having the guts to do it. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Dennis. Okay, anybody want to talk about baseball? No. anyone else wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Sir, anyone else wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Seeing none, I'm going to close the citizens' comment period. That'll be the last time for that. And
Oh, okay. Don't jump the gun.
All right.
Follow the clock.
I thought last meeting was my last meeting, but I'm an old guy. But you have before you the regular meeting minutes of March 18th, 2014. Any comments?
So moved as amended.
Second. Second. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Reports and recommendations. Resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for an outdoor minor league professional baseball stadium. Use upon property located at 7900 West Crystal Ridge Drive, Rock Sports Complex, LLC, applicant. I understand that we have the applicant is here and we have some special guests, Mr. Deedle. Before we begin, I'll just say what I said at, the, I believe, the last two meetings, this one and the task force, and that... Well, not the task force, but this is the discussion here is a discussion about zoning and site plans and things of that nature. This is not a meeting that we're going to be discussing finance. That's the task force will be bringing those items up at their Wednesday meeting, and I believe I just saw the agenda just went out for that meeting. So I will tell you that the staff of the city has literally been working tirelessly behind the scenes, putting things together. In fact, Joel Deedle looks like he could use another vacation right now, and so does Mr. Liberta. So things have things will go to the task force as was desired, and take those things up perhaps in closed session then. So with that, Mr. Deedle, could you please bring up the applicants and make the presentation? Do we have any overheads or anything? And if you could, anyone that's going to be speaking tonight, could you please state your name and address for the record?
Mike Zimmerman, 7337 South Cambridge.
My name is Bill Lee. I'm the commissioner of the Frontier League, and my home residence is 204 Eden Park Boulevard in Shiloh, Illinois.
Welcome to Franklin, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here today with this special occasion.
Josh Schaub, 4259 Linden Hills Boulevard, Minneapolis, Minnesota, CEO of the Joliet Slammers, owner of that team as well.
Nice to see you again, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for making the trip here. Mr. Zimmerman?
Yeah, I'd like to start saying thank you, Mayor, for your service. It's been... We met each other a couple years ago, and it's been a real pleasure. So, and congratulations on your retirement. Just, I wanted to remind you, you still have 14 days still. So, we've got work to do.
I got a legal opinion on it.
Mr. Bennett, thank you for your service. Alderman Skaronski, thank you for your service. It's been great working with you guys. So, I'll just turn this over to, I've got two guests. We'll make it kind of short and sweet. The first is Bill Lee. He's the commissioner of the Frontier League. Last time we spoke to the Planning Commission, we did a presentation. Josh did one. I think some of you folks missed that, so we're going to rinse and repeat a little bit, but Bill was nice enough to rearrange his schedule to come up here and talk a bit about the Frontier League, because I think it's important for Franklin to understand that. So, Bill, why don't you talk a bit about how great the Frontier League is?
Well, I'll do my best.
Yep.
Okay. Once again, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Congratulations.
Mr. Worker, can you hear him back there? Okay. Thank you.
Everybody okay? Congratulations, Mr. Mayor, on a wonderful career, and thank you to the council for having us, the City of Franklin, and all the distinguished guests here tonight. Very proud to be here on behalf of the Frontier League. The Frontier League is the oldest independent professional baseball league in the country and the longest continuous running independent professional baseball league in the country. A lot of people say, what's independent baseball? Independent baseball actually started with a new movement in 1993. Prior to that, going way back to the 60s, even all the minor league sport baseball was really independent ball because they all operated independently of the major league clubs. But what do? We give kids second chances to play that have already played professional baseball. We have had the Frontier League is starting its 22nd season. And I have been the commissioner of that league. I'm starting my 21st season with it. I'm the only commissioner they've ever had. I'm the longest running commissioner in all of independent professional baseball, and I got the gray hair also to prove it. Because I'm only 28 years old. I mean, it looks terrible, doesn't it? But it's a great thing, and we have had 1,200 kids out of the Frontier League that have signed with major league organizations. 27 of those kids began their career with us and moved up to the major leagues. It's been a lot of fun to watch it grow. Because the first thing that was said to me when I interviewed for the job in 1994, January 1994, the first question asked me by the president of the league at that time was, why in the heck would you want this job? This league's going to be out of business by the end of the year. I said, well, if I take it, I better not, because I was living in Seattle and I was moving back to Ohio, so I figured I better make it work. And we started building it, and we'd play anywhere we could back in those days, high school fields, city parks, whatever we could find. And we had some good owners that had a vision. And they had a vision for the league. And while every single owner always wants to see their team do well, that's number 1A, just as this young man would be here. And just as you would want to see your team do great. But it's also important that's number one. And 1A needs to be the league, the strength of the league. You're only as good as your partners. And that's very important. And we've preached that from day one. And it's as important for me to have ownership that sits around our table just as much as it is for you to have strong council members that help you and that you guys can all work together. And that's what gets things done. That's why you're getting them done here and have been getting them done here. We are the oldest. And when I go into towns and communities, and I've had the great fortune of sitting in front of a lot of city councils over the years, and I take this relationship that the league has with our cities very, very seriously, because no matter what happens, it's our reputation too. It's the Frontier League's reputation too. We want things to be done right. We want things to be done first class. I learned a long time ago, I've been working in the baseball business now, I'm starting my 34th year in professional sports. And my first boss in this business told me, he says, you know, there's a big difference in major league and minor league. But there's a bigger difference in first class and second class. And if you do things first class, it'll always show. So that's the way we've always tried to do it. And we've been striving and striving for all these years, and it's come a long way. From coming into cities like, we're into St. Louis market, Cleveland, Pittsburgh market, Chicago markets, Cincinnati market, and Milwaukee is sitting right there for us, the Milwaukee suburbs, and it's a great thing to have. It would fit very, very nicely with us. I think all of our other owners are very anxious to get to know this young man and get to know your community as well. And I am very pleased to say that when we come into a market, the first thing I look at is the market itself. And I was in here a few weeks ago, and then I came back again today and drove around. And it's just, it's wonderful. Very, very nice. The location of the facility, top notch. The ownership strength, and who's the management of it. All those things are going to, those are the four things that I look at. And when I can answer thumbs up and a good answer, a positive on every single one of those four, that's when you have magic. And magic is what you want here. Because what you have with the professional baseball club, whether it's minor league, major league, whatever it is. And it sounds like a lot of people obviously here are huge Brewers fans. And you're dealing with a quality of life issue, a community pride issue, and a publicity issue. You get people from all over the country, and you get creative with things. For example, our team in Traverse City, Michigan, I don't know how many of you know about Traverse City, but there's beaches there, and a lot of people didn't know there was beaches there. They named themselves the Beach Bums. You know, and we love, and they can market those kind of things. The same thing holds true here. This is going to be a fabulous area for it. And it's an affordable family atmosphere. That's what we want to do. We want to make it very affordable. And that when you go out there, your kids can have a great time. You can let your kids run crazy in there, and there'll be playgrounds, and it's a safe, fan-friendly environment. But also a facility that hosts many things, that covers the full spectrum for people. It just can't be a baseball stadium. You don't want it to be a baseball stadium. You want it to be something that takes and encompasses the entire community, that the entire community can be proud of. And that's what our facilities are doing. A lot of our facilities are creating economic development around them right now. We've been very fortunate with some of them that, for example, our Washington, Pennsylvania one has a huge medical complexes and restaurants and hotels going up right around it. Florence, Kentucky has a hotel going up around it. The Gateway Grizzlies around the St. Louis area have medical buildings going up around them. And then we have them that are in the centers of towns, like Josh's Club in Joliet, and they have residences, and they've got businesses all around them. Evansville, Indiana, that has the oldest operating minor league ballpark in the country. Who's seen the movie A League of Their Own? About the girls' baseball, professional baseball league. Well, that's where it was filmed. Was in Evansville. That was one of the three facilities used. And still today, they have the Racine Bells signs up inside the ballpark. But it's a tremendous thing that we do with our clubs, with our communities, and bringing the awareness to it and creating that family fun. And we at Frontier League would look very, very forward to having your community as a part of what we do. And I thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to Josh Schaub right now, and please feel free to ask questions of me or Josh anytime.
Well, and again, welcome to the city of Franklin, and thank you so much for coming up. I think both the public and the elected officials needed to hear from one of the top people, if not the top person. So thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for having me back. Council, appreciate it, and want to warn you, some of you may have heard my presentation last week, so I apologize if you have to hear it again. I'm also going to add some detail based on some comments we heard from the public, and I want to get a little more granular about what this stadium will do for your community. With that, you know, as Bill touched on, you're getting much more than just a baseball stadium. You're getting a community asset. Mike may be the shepherd of that community aspect, but really it's for the people. There's going to be a lot more events going on there besides just the team playing. Could be the amazing race. It could be soccer tournaments. Could be all sorts of things that provide avenues for your citizens to enjoy a park in a safe, affordable, family-friendly venue. Something that is lacking in today's society is the avenues for children and families to show up in an affordable manner. Bereft of technology, bereft of your cell phone in front of you constantly, it is a tremendous venue that we have seen play out throughout the country with these stadiums. I've seen it personally in Joliet. I've been in professional baseball for 9 years. I've seen this happen in a number of different stadiums, and really to just solely focus on this as a baseball stadium is short-sighted. It's much, much more than that, and it will be presented to you, I believe, in this meeting here and on your meeting on Wednesday, really the true impact of what this stadium is beyond just baseball. And I do think it's appropriate that we sit here on opening day knowing that in 13 months you could be beginning the 2015 championship season in Franklin. Players would be reporting on May 1st to your city to start spring training, 13 months from today. Something pretty cool. Thank you. Yeah. If now, when I say championship, the caveat is you got to beat my team. That's going to be a problem. Yeah, championship season. But anyways, what is before you here today is an extraordinary opportunity. And you, as Bill touched on, Milwaukee is a strategic market for our league. It's also a strategic market for other cities within the Milwaukee area. You are competing for this stadium. Keep that in mind. cities of like mind, like means and assets want the stadium in their market. And I challenge the council and the mayor, if you have not called other mayors with teams in this league or other minor leagues and asked them if they regret building a stadium, I'm going to guarantee that 99% of them will say, absolutely, that was the right decision to make. So keep that in mind. You're getting something in a stadium that cannot be duplicated in any other city in the Milwaukee market. Everyone can build strip malls. Everyone can build commercial buildings. But when you build a minor league stadium, you're the only one in the Milwaukee market that can have that. Due to territorial restrictions, due to league restrictions, no one else will have this. Only Franklin in the Milwaukee market. You will be unique. You will be exposed on a worldwide level through internet streaming of our games and in the future TV, which we were just at league meetings last week, and we had a presentation on our league actually being broadcast. So this is a tremendous opportunity in front of you. And I encourage you to think about the big picture in this sense. It's not just baseball. It is much, much more than that. Now to the granular level of, I want to dig into some of the things that were talked about last week in the meeting. First off, real estate values and what minor league baseball does to real estate values. And keep in mind, I am not just the owner of the Joliet Slammers. I'm not just a former professional baseball scout. I am a former law school professor of sports law. I've studied this. I've written scholarship regarding this. I've studied the academic nature and watched this unfold throughout the country. So I'm well-versed in what a minor league stadium does on an economic level. Regarding this situation, if you go and look around the country, you're going to find a lot of different studies regarding what stadiums do on an economic level. The one I found that was really relative is what happened in Sacramento. Raley Field was built in 2000 for $40 million. It's a very large stadium. They did a retroactive, or I guess a retrospective study on real estate values around the stadium in 2006. In 2006, they found that houses and condos within a one-mile radius of that stadium actually increased in value at a higher percentage rate than any other homes and condos within the city. I think that's a very relevant study for you to look at as well regarding this. It's very well put together. I also encourage you to research studies done by Andrew Zimblist, a former and, well, current well-known scholar regarding sports economy. As far as the comments regarding where stadiums are placed and why they're placed in certain areas, it's true, Joliet is in a downtown district. We do have houses nearby. Bill, I think, will probably mention some of the other teams in our league, but I also encourage the council and the public to look beyond the Frontier League and see where minor league stadiums have been built. If you just go an hour west of here to Madison, you'll find the Madison Mallards ballpark right amongst a residential area. And that stadium draws 6,500 people a night. And I would guess that the mayor of Madison really enjoys actually having the Madison Mallards in town because they get national exposure. You know, the list goes on and on. But look beyond the Frontier League when you see where stadiums are built and why, and realize that if stadiums are built in rural areas, they're built because they're trying to develop businesses out in the places they're putting them. And they also get cheap land out here. What you have here in Franklin is a very unique opportunity that you have a chunk of land in the middle of a city that allows for a stadium to actually be built at a relatively economic cost. It's a very unique opportunity, and I said that last week, and it holds true, you know, again right now. Not any other community in the country has the ability to put this facility in a market like this. You know, a lot of cities put their ballparks out in rural areas because they have nowhere else to put it in the city, or else they would. Lastly, I want to talk about the reasonable economics. I think Mike and his staff have done a great job regarding the cost of this stadium and what you're getting. A lot of stadiums in the last few years, and you can even look around the country right now, St. Paul's building a stadium for $64 million in downtown St. Paul. Charlotte's building a huge stadium. Biloxi's building a huge stadium. What Mike is providing you and his staff is a stadium built for the market. He's providing 3,000 seats, approximately thereabout, for a relatively modest sum. So your citizens will be able to enjoy a baseball game in a seat with a cup holder in front of them, just like they will in Biloxi and St. Paul, for a lot less expense than what they're paying. So I just want you to keep that in mind as you move forward as well. Lastly, the Frontier League just came out with some demographic studies, and just to verify some of the comments I made last week about people traveling to Franklin, and I commented about Joliet, and but for the stadium being in Joliet, we probably wouldn't have 125,000 people coming downtown otherwise. So some numbers that were put out by the Gateway Grizzlies actually regarding their team, time traveled by their fans. 10 to 20 minutes, half of their fans come from 10 to 20 minutes away from their stadium. So I'd ask you, are those people coming in to Gateway to watch games and spend money in that community otherwise? And Bill, what was Gateway's attendance last year in totality?
No, they were almost 4,000 a night.
Yeah.
So
we're talking 200,000. So half, about 100,000 people came into Gateway from 10 to 20 minutes away that otherwise probably wouldn't. You can go down the list, 21 to 30 minutes out, 21% of their fans came in. And that's just baseball games. That's just baseball games. We're not talking about other events that go on in there. So I just want to get more granular and verify some of the numbers that we talked about last week. And I know minor league baseball has done studies saying that fans come from 25 and 30 minutes out to attend games. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about attracting fans into your community. And unfortunately, as I said last week too, not all of them eat at my ballpark for dinner. Unfortunately, my food's not good enough yet. They go to restaurants before they come to our game, and those are local restaurants outside our stadium. So keep that in mind as you put forward this vote. Lastly, and this is my last point, if you want extraordinary results, you need to take an extraordinary approach. If you want ordinary results and you want to be another community in the suburb without a baseball stadium, it's easy to vote no for this. But as I said, look around the country, and those communities that took the tough choice and built stadiums don't regret it. So I encourage you to take the extraordinary choice, vote yes on this, and you will receive extraordinary results. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask you a question?
Please.
I think you touched on major league players that have either played in the major leagues or are maybe trying to get in the major leagues.
Yes.
And the reason I'm asking that is because there's been all kinds of reports out there by the press. Some of the broadcasters, believe it or not, I don't think ever played baseball. But there's this A-League, AA, AAA, and then leagues that are affiliated with Major League Baseball versus the Frontier League.
Correct.
And I guess former baseball player. I think all of us we love the Brewers because you get to go down there and you get to watch major league stars.
That's correct.
And playing the best ball that they possibly can. What type of baseball are we going to enjoy here? Is it mostly people that played in the major leagues? Is it mostly people that are trying to get back in the majors? Or, is this, some beer league where a couple guys get together? And because I think there's a lot of confusion in the community as to why is this such a great deal? I think if this was the Timber Rattlers and Robin Yount and Paul Molitor showed up, we'd be cutting the ribbon over there right now. Except for the financing, because what I hear. Are we actually going to see major league players or major league caliber players? Not college guys, not guys.
Well, let me answer you this way, Mayor. First, you said former baseball player. I was too. I had 2 years, played 2 years professional baseball, and my career average was .370. Unfortunately,
I'm talking high school.
No, I'm but my 2 years of pro ball and career .370, and it was .180 my first year, .190 my second. So I was not very good. So I figured sooner or later, I'm going to be doing something in the business. But when the league started, it was actually geared just simply to get kids that were right out of college and give them their first chance at some professional baseball. And then since then, the league has evolved. And in professional baseball, in the affiliated side of professional baseball, which all starts with the major league clubs, and then each club has their AAA clubs, and their AA clubs, and their Class A clubs, and their rookie clubs. And what we are is our kids, the kids that we get, the majority of the kids we get now, probably about 75 to 80% of the kids we're getting now have already played affiliated professional ball at some level, whether it be
for like the Timber Rattlers, or whether it be the AA level, the AAA level. We've had guys that have played in the big leagues come into the league every now and then. Mostly they will go to some of the other independent leagues that, A, pay more money to their players, B, have just older guys playing there. The Frontier League has an age limit of 27. We figure by that time, if the guys haven't been able to move on, it's probably time to move on. And so you'll see a very good brand of baseball. And what you see is guys that are, A, the probably 3 to 4 kids are just out of college. Then the rest have all had some sort of professional experience. You will see guys that will wind up playing here 5 and 6 years and become a part of the fabric of Franklin. We do a host family program that the kids actually live in homes here. You will see a good brand of baseball, an entertaining brand of baseball, that the kids play very hard. I've been asked a lot of times, well, between the Midwest League, like the Timber Rattlers and the Frontier League, what's the difference? Okay, well, with the Midwest League, the majority of the kids in that league are probably 19 to 21 years of age. Here, our average age is about 24 to 25. And there's, while the upside is probably with the younger kid, the dreaded P word that everybody always talks about, potential. In our kids, it's the fact that they have done this, they have repeated the skill more often. So you see a little different caliber of play, but they may throw harder at Wisconsin, or they may run faster. Okay, but the actual quality of play is very good in our league. And one of the things that we stress is the fan friendliness. I'm telling you, if I see a kid that doesn't want to sign an autograph for a kid, I'm telling you what, I go crazy. We really watch them. We want to be involved with the kids. We want them out there doing clinics. We want them teaching and coaching and doing everything they can, because they are a part of the fabric of your community. That's what's important to us.
Okay, I think you covered my question.
Mayor, real quick, Josh wanted to
ask
a scout.
Yeah, I'm putting my scout hat on for this one. I'll just put it in context. Mr. Mayor, how many mayors?
You were a major league scout?
I was an associate scout for the Brewers under Harvey Kane Jr. Still am. He's a pretty good scout. Yeah. So this is junior, yeah. How many mayors are there in the United States? Do you know?
A lot of people would say too many.
Okay, we'll say thousands, right?
Yeah.
So I get this question all the time. How good are your players? You know, are these guys washed up? What's the deal? There's approximately 750 big leaguers, right? And there's best players in the world playing in the big leagues. Then you have AAA, probably another 750 players. So we're up to 1,500. 1,500 best players in the world. Then there's probably another 750 in AA. So we're up to 2,250. Then I think you get to our players. Our players that have played in A-ball, high A, and some big league team has decided they're not a big leaguer. They're not one of the top 2,250 players in the world. And I can tell you, you get to player 2251, they're still damn good baseball players. They're just not big leaguers. And that's nothing to sneeze at. To be a big leaguer is incredible. It means you're a world-class athlete. If you break it down even further, 60 shortstops at Major League, 60 shortstop at AAA, and 60 shortstop at AA, I think last year I had the 161st best shortstop in the world playing Joliet. I really believe that. So when you say, well, these guys aren't an affiliated ball, they're not, you know, in the big leagues, it just means some big league team has decided that they will not be a big leaguer someday. And you know what? Those big league teams are often wrong. They're wrong, and they come to our league, they play really well, they develop, and they go back to the big leagues. So you will occasionally find a player in our league that was passed over, that some scout made a mistake on, and trust me, we make a lot of mistakes. You will get great baseball here.
Okay. When I was playing high school ball, we had two guys, and they were both All-State. Don Wendt played short, and Sammy Hagedorn was catcher. And I remember them so good because these guys were just outstanding ball players. My good friend, who actually is was one of the heads of the Teamsters out in Vegas, he tried out for the Brewers. He used to throw a 90-mile-an-hour fastball down there. The reason I'm bringing it up is because as good as they were, they didn't come close to making AAA ball or minor league ball. And so the type of player we're talking about is maybe the guy that went to Michigan State or Wisconsin and have that. They're world-class athletes. They may not be major league athletes, but world-class. Right?
I haven't been on any of the team websites in the league, but I know, for example, the Lacrosse Loggers, which are the North, that's a Northwoods league, on their page they have a little tab, players in the big leagues, and I believe there are 10 players. They show them in the Lacrosse Loggers uniform, and then they show them in their major league uniform. At one play for the White Sox and Mariners. I don't remember the name, but there's like, I believe there's about 10 of them over the last 6, 7, 8 years. Do you guys have any of that on any of your team sites? Because so you could say, oh, you know that person. Oh, I recognize that name. Because I recognize some of the names. One of them, I believe, is that real good pitcher on the Tigers, Scherzer. He played for Lacrosse Loggers for a season. And he was pitching the World Series last year. Yep. Their ace.
Yep.
Did he win the Cy Young too, I think?
Yeah.
So I see. I know what you're saying. Just based on this one team site, just because I know the owner of that team.
It's in fact today in the Brewers game. Brandon Kinsler and Ian Thomas on the Braves are both independently guys pitched in the big league game today.
See, that's what's not getting out there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I think for many people in the community, they're going, oh, you know, there's a couple guys that couldn't make it, and high school stars or something.
Yeah, personal story. We drafted Caleb Thielbar, the Brewers, in the 18th round, and he was released by the Brewers, went to St. Paul, and now he's in the big leagues for the Twins, shoving.
You're going to get grilled by an expert. This is the former sports editor of the local newspaper. So Doug knows what he's talking about.
Well, I don't want to put a damper on his parade, but I had a more practical question since we're honored to have the commissioner here. The relationship between the franchises and the league, are they... is it like a year-to-year contract that the teams have with the league? That heaven forbid that a franchise fails or doesn't work out, and
it's happened.
Pull out.
I understand 100% what you're saying, Alderman. What the Frontier League is, the Frontier League is the entity, is actually a non-profit entity. The teams in the league they have memberships. In the league, we are structured very much like a country club, for example. We don't do franchising. We have memberships. And when people come aboard, that's what they are purchasing. There is a set of bylaws and membership agreements that they have to live by. And if they don't perform, then they can, or if they decide to up and leave or go out of business, then there's ramifications to that.
There are penalties to the team if they don't uphold their membership agreement.
That's correct.
The other thing that's fascinated me since we've just been privy to this whole thing since January, you're creating, this league has been around a long time. Is this fairly standard? I understand you're looking to add two franchises for 2015. Is this window of opportunity always this short for a team to be able to put everything together? Or, I mean, because it seems kind of odd to me that there's so little time for so many things to be done. I mean, we're looking at a special use permit with 24 points, and that's only part of the hurdles that we're dealing with.
Sure. A lot of the timing differs. I've been 4, 5, 6 years to put together, okay? Others you have, like in this particular situation, you've got a potential owner, you've got the potential market, you've got everything that can really get moving, and somebody that wants to get moving, and that we want them to get moving. We'd love to have them in here. I think it would be tremendous to have this team. And so we've had them at different time frames, but normally when you do these things, the quicker the better. A lot of times if it goes too long, obviously, then it starts going to the back burner, and some people, it kind of loses its zest. But if you can do things within 1 to 2 years, yes, you've got a really good, very, very good chance of success, because that gives that team a really good chance to get out there and market it and get the excitement built. And then the community jumps on board to see that stadium being built. And, wow, look at this. Look at the lights go up. And then, then things start going on.
Of course, we are being asked to put a package together within 1 to 4 months.
it's close.
The other pressures and how many teams you're going to have.
That is the other thing, that we have to have an even number of teams in the league. And there's make sure we do, that we do.
Well, let me be a little bit more direct. So if the council and Mr. Zimmerman were not able to get to yes, and let's say we wanted to have further negotiations, obviously I'm not going to be here. How much time does he actually have? We're trying to, I've said, and I think it's a reasonable time frame that it's got to get the shovel in the ground as soon as possible and get the stadium, the infrastructure, the stop-and-go lights, everything there so that he can get back to the Frontier League with an answer about scheduling because you'll have 19
teams. The scheduling needs to be done. Everybody has to say they're playing or they're not playing by September 15th. And obviously when you're building a facility and you're building it in...
September 2014.
Yes, September 15th of 2014. That's when he has to declare to us that he's playing or not. Okay. That would be the final day.
Because that's why what Schmidt is asking is... This is highly unusual. We have done it on certain projects, special projects, you know, Northwestern Mutual, Wheaton Franciscan Hospital. Right. But we really, as a community, I mean, the neighbors, they don't, you know, they have major questions about the whole thing and legitimate questions. And a lot of people are going, why are we rushing this? You know, let's the community should take its time, go through the 14 or 24 points and walk this like we do all the projects. And so it's extremely important to find out, you know, is this a real deadline, you know, or is this something? I'm sorry, but is this something that Mr. Zimmerman and his associates are making up? You know, that's what we need to find out.
All right, now my hat is a member of the expansion committee for the Frontier League. I can't speak about details. I don't believe, but there is other competitors to get this 14 franchise. So it is critical that you move fast, or else someone will get it. Is that fair? So there is another community right now competing for this 14th franchise. In terms of expediency, it is extremely important. As far as is this abnormal to speed up like this? As I said, you know, previously watching this scenario unfold across the country, it often is a timeline crunch to get these done and get ready for the next season. It's just the nature of the business. That's the way many of these deals get done. They are under extreme timeline.
Alderman Mayor, who's the alderman for the district.
Thank you. A couple of statements and a couple of questions on how we're going to proceed. You mentioned the thousands of people coming into town from out of town, and you mentioned all of the glowing things that this could produce. But part of it is the practical side of it, and the balancing side of it is you got to remember this is coming down next to neighbors, next to a neighborhood who didn't ask for it. You mentioned property values going up. Well, they might be very happy with the current property value that they had, and they didn't move out here and build their homes in a beautiful area to have a stadium come in. And there are some more concerns that I'll get to in a minute, too. Did you want to respond?
No, wait.
You were grabbing the mic. Then will we go through the neighborhood era memo, Mr. Deedle, and brief
sure.
on that,
Absolutely.
Brief on the items? I don't know if this would be the time to do that or...
Yep.
Okay. If we could do that, then.
Well, and again, I want to make it clear. This is the alderman for the district. This is the gentleman that has all the neighbors that have come down. And again, you know, I really the 14 points that Mr. Dole came up with, the other gentleman that came up with the methane issues. These are legitimate, serious concerns that we have to address. Alderman.
If you want to say something, Mike, to what I said, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I would say, first off, we share those concerns. I read their memos, and, you know, we can't do anything without DNR permission. So we're, you know, all over, and the DNR may come back and say, for whatever reason, this isn't going to happen. But that aside, I would say this is about context, too, Mr. Alderman. Like, it's already approved to have four softball fields. So it's in my... When I talk to the neighbors about this, it's not a matter of if development's happening, it's to what extent. So right now we could build four softball fields where lights are blazing every night and softball crowd is in there three games a night, or there's the stadium deal. So while I appreciate the concerns, and they were there 2 years ago and went down this road, the stadium in many regards is actually a relief from a traffic count standpoint. So I would just say from a context standpoint, DNR, all that, all of that, those DNR issues. Like, we've got a, there's a lot of laws in place, and there's, you know, planning is in place to make sure that we don't do something that we wouldn't be able to do. But when it comes down to whether or not development is going to happen or not, that's really, that's not on the table. It's just a matter of what are we developing. So I think that's important when we talk about the stadium.
The open house that you've been planning to have for quite a while.
Well, we have one, yes.
You had the one, then you're going to have a more
sure,
formal
yep,
one.
Yep, yep.
It's still in the works.
Yep.
It would have been nice to have that before this meeting.
Oh, I had one before this meeting.
A small one, but then you were going to do
well,
a more
Well, half the neighbors were there, with all respect.
Yeah, but that one was put together without any without letting me know about it until the last minute. I had another commitment. I would have liked to be there for the entire presentation, and I would have liked all of the neighbors to be invited to that. And that was my understanding for the next formal one, that that's going to happen, and that should have happened before this. Mr. Deedle, if you could go through points.
I'll go briefly through them, and if anybody has questions, just speak up. We received a letter from four of the neighbors of the stadium at the night of the public hearing, and they raised 14 different concerns, many of which are addressed in the staff report. And the Plan Commission at the time, the mayor as well, asked staff to look into those comments or concerns and address them. So just going down the line, one of them was proximity. The neighbors concerned about the proximity of the stadium to their houses. And in my replies are primarily based on what the city zoning ordinances require and what we as a city often do in response to other concerns that neighbors would have to any other kind of project. So again, the city ordinances in terms of proximity has a very small setback, building setback from property lines, 20 feet in this instance. The stadium itself is being proposed approximately 900 feet away from the property lines. So from a legal standpoint required by the zoning ordinance in the zoning district, they're much farther away than the minimum that they have to be. I also did look into a couple examples. Again, there is no stadium of this magnitude located in the city, but there are the football stadium at the high school. There is a football stadium at the Milwaukee County Sports Complex. Both of those are adjacent to residential development, approximately 500 feet away. And the stadium, again, is about 900 feet away. So, again, from a legal standpoint, the zoning minimum, they're much farther away from houses than the zoning minimum requires. They're twice as far away as the next closest examples of this kind of situation.
Ms. City Attorney?
I thought comment was invited. I would just say when city planner or the planning manager refers to from a legal standpoint, that's probably not a good characterization because there is a zoning code, and it does have standard 20-foot setbacks for certain zoning districts, but this is a special use. If it was just from a legal standpoint, it would be a permitted use where you just pay an application fee and get a permit and you build, and then you're limited to the 20 feet. But this is a special use where factors regarding impacts on adjoining properties and the like are involved. So from a legal perspective, it comes down to what is it and where is it in relation to adjoining properties. But I think he covered that with the distance, true actual distances involved in the proposal, which are 50 times what his reference to the minimum setback was.
The next concern that the neighbors raised was about sufficient buffer zones. Again, the city ordinances require when there are land uses, different land uses immediately adjacent to one another, the more intense land use has to have a buffer zone from the lesser land use. A stadium, recreation facilities are more intense than residential. Our zoning ordinance requires a minimum 30-foot buffer. The applicant is providing a 30-foot buffer. The Plan Commission recommended in addition to that the buffer include an 8-foot high berm. So again, meeting being more than what the minimum is required in the Unified Development Ordinance.
This one closely goes along with number one, the proximity, in my view. Now down the road, after everything is established, Can we, if we need to, as something that might be a possible solution down the road, can we ask them to put in a higher berm or something like that? Or once this 8-foot berm is set, is that it?
With the, I believe it's going to be pretty tight. Engineering department usually likes to have slopes not exceed a certain steepness for maintenance and safety purposes. I suspect this is getting close to that. They would have to push back the parking lot to be able to have, I suspect they would have to push back the parking lot to make a higher berm and keep a safe slope on it. Once they start construction, it would probably be very difficult to do that. Before they would start construction, it would be easier to do.
But in your view, based on your experience, you think the 8-foot would be sufficient, especially given the fact that the stadium is really going to be more of a bowl, correct?
Well, that, yes, the stadium is a bowl, but I was looking at everything. So the first thing is the parking lot. The parking lot is what's closest to these homes. Parking lots will have noise and light. I think the berm will do a very good job of mitigating and minimizing most of that, not all of it. Not only is there a berm there, but there's going to be a landscape berm. So not only will it be an 8-foot high berm, there'll be plants and trees on top of that.
Okay.
And we'll encourage them to plant that as thick as they can. So that'll be an additional height. The berm itself will do a very good job for the noise and the lights. The landscaping, better job for the lights. There'll be some noise that can make it through. The stadium itself is a little bit, the concourse will be higher. It will be built on like its own set of berm, but the ball field itself will be down inside. So we estimate that the location of the berm, the orientation, the location of the stadium, the orientation of the stadium, the fact that it is playing field is a little bit lower. Those will be as much or more so to minimize the impact of noise and lights on the homes and the berm.
Alderman, do you mind if I ask a question on that? If there's no stadium built, Common Council can't reach a deal here. Okay, what Mr. Zimmerman said is that he's got approval for four more diamonds and maybe soccer field, et cetera, with lighted fields. How much berming will there be for those fields?
We would have looked at it at that time. I suspect we would not have asked for an 8-foot high berm.
So berming?
It would have been a berm, but a smaller berm, I suspect.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's really important to understand that. it's not that that's going to remain an open field. It's going to be probably as busy as the current baseball fields are. Who knows, if you get the wave out here, you could, on occasion, you can really fill it up. I mean, I'll be happy to talk to Sue about that. But, and just the last piece, because the berming has a lot to do with the music, right, and the attractions. When the farmer owner had the facility, I went out there because he had the first annual Altero bike event, and they had music, and I don't know who the group was. It wasn't the Rolling Stones, and it wasn't Frank Sinatra, but it was somebody. But they had concerts out there. And if you already had, I don't know if you want to call it concerts, you've had bands out there. So whether you get the stadium or not, you're still going to have that. And so you're either going to have it with a stadium with berming or four baseball fields and soccer field without berming. And the music's still going to be. Am I right?
No, I think there would have been a berm, but a smaller berm.
Smaller. But you're still going to have all the, you're going to have the music. I mean, all of this is permitted, right?
Right. The music and the fireworks are not permitted. They will still have to come back.
Because I think there's this huge disconnect out there that people think that that's just going to remain an open field, and it is not. So, I'm sorry.
Good. Thank you.
Ongoing noise was the next one, and there are provisions within the Unified Development Ordinance that the city can allow exceptions to the city's noise limits for recreational facilities, but they haven't done so at this time. At this point in time, they would have to abide by the city's noise regulations. I talked to the police department. The inspector had mentioned that they have received noise complaints in the past already, but none of those were confirmed to be violations of the city's noise limits. His best guess was that the stadium itself would not violate the city's noise limits, although concerts and fireworks possibly could.
Concerts and fireworks are all approved individually, correct?
Yes, the applicant will have to come back for council approval.
So if we had an issue with one particular concert, the next time they come for another concert, we could deny that?
It would help if we set that up ahead of time when they get their first approval,
okay,
to have some kind of mechanism in place, either that they can't exceed a certain limit or they have to come back whether there's a problem or not, or that the council can only grant them a temporary approval until there's, okay, a problem or to review the whole situation.
Okay, thanks.
Hours of operation, right now they're from 7 in the morning to 10:30 at night for the ball fields and the lighting for the ball fields, with an allowance for extra innings and repair and cleaning up and that kind of thing. The applicant is asking for a half-hour extension to move that from 10:30 at night to 11 at night. That also will have to come back to Plan Commission and Common Council for approval. The city attorney will probably mention that he did look into the issue of the potential for tailgating, and he's going to recommend something in regards to limiting hours for that as well. Again, that 11 p.m. Time limit was originally proposed or recommended by staff and was changed to 10:30 because that's what's in the agreement they have with Milwaukee County. Lighting, the lighting standards will have to be met as well. In that regards, we are asking for more detailed information from the applicant. We are recommending that they put shields on their lights, and if they don't, if they can't agree with those, then that issue would have to come back to the Plan Commission.
But if they do that, they've got the permits if they do that. But it,
yep,
says they'll have to redo another plan to bring back?
Yes, because we wanted more detail about how the shields will work, confirm that they will have shields,
okay,
confirm how they work, and then make sure cumulative impacts wouldn't exceed any city standards.
Okay.
They did provide information on parking lots. They provided information on the stadium, but they didn't put the two together.
Okay.
Traffic, that one, Plan Commission is also recommending a traffic impact analysis to study what traffic will be generated from this activity, not just the stadium, but for the complex as an entire entity, and the impact of all the local roads. So 76th, Loomis, Rawson, all those roads will be studied as part of the traffic impact analysis.
And is that before building permit?
Yes. Most of these conditions that we have, that something has to be done, most of them are before building permit.
Okay.
So the traffic impact analysis is a good example. It's my understanding they've started working on it. And then, like a normal condition for any development that we have in the city, something of that nature would have to be done, completed, reviewed by city staff. If it requires any significant changes to the project, it has to come back to Plan Commission and Council.
Okay, good.
And all before building permit. Parking, the applicant or the neighbors were concerned about parking in the neighborhood, and the applicant indicated to us that they didn't envision any parking in the neighborhood, and that they were trying to accommodate all parking on their property or on the county property. Their staff and Plan Commission were recommending that as well. We do want more information on what that parking need is going to be. If they can't address that full need with the existing amount of parking lots that they show on their plans, we're either asking that they provide more information to show why their number is better than ours, or provide future parking areas within the Rock.
If it becomes an issue with them parking in the neighborhoods down the road, can we do something like put up no parking, parking for residents only?
Yes.
Residents or somebody associated with residents.
Yeah, normally that's requested by the property owners, and I believe they go to the Board of Public Works.
Okay.
But that's not uncommon to address that through that process.
Okay.
I don't think we can do that for residents. We can come up with a way to keep the parking out. We've done that with the school now.
The next guy will be easier. He'll let us do it.
Yeah.
Get him quick.
Next issue raised by the neighbors was tailgate parties, and as I mentioned, there is some information in the materials that they were thinking about having tailgating. Again, the city attorney is going to talk about that. We're going to require that the same process used for the other activities that aren't mapped on the site plans have to come back for staff review and approval, so that staff can look at locations, hours, those kinds of the way it's going to operate, to make sure that it's consistent with city rules and regulations, no adverse impact on the neighbors. If we do see problems with that and they're not able to revise their request for something like tailgating, that would also come back to Plan Commission Council. Police and fire and paramedic services, as far as I know, I didn't do a lot of research on this one. I believe that those services would be provided to the ROC as needed, unless there was some other agreement reached.
Mike, this one's for Mike. Mike, we talked, one of your first meetings, you talked about additional police and possibly additional ambulance on standby that you would be paying for. And you and I talked, I think it was at the meeting that I asked you to go through our chiefs to provide that.
Yeah, we were happy to accommodate whatever, you know, we defer to police and fire here. If we need extra, we'll bring that in internally.
Okay, good.
Can I weigh in on that? You might know this. I took and walked with the police chief and the fire chief and walked the entire grounds with the plans and with some potential future plans for that area. And I just met with the fire chief again today. I'm not really hearing from either one of them any additional staff. What I'm hearing is what they have, they could handle.
Okay. And I wasn't referring to additional staff either,
right,
for us. I was just referring more or less to special events where you need traffic control,
right,
or security or something like that.
Just one time.
Next one was enforcement of regulations. As with any other project that city approves, any regulations that are the city will enforce. Many of these requirements, you know, the traffic impact analysis, verifying that the lighting levels will meet the city standards, those are conditions, as I mentioned before, that are going to require, that will be need to be met before the building permit can be issued. Ongoing operational issues would be the normal complaint process. And I guess that was all I had to say. That it would be a normal process for this project as with any other project. The issues that we identify that would have immediate impact on the construction, you know, changing the construction to make the project better, are going to be required to be met before building permit. Anything that happens after the construction would be the normal complaint process.
Okay.
Property values, staff only started looking into that, didn't get very far. We didn't find a lot of information. All we did is internet search. We did not find a lot of information. There were some studies. We didn't find any studies that were particularly comparable to ours. Our situation being, you know, adjacent to residential development, you know, not on city-owned land, in a recreational complex that already has some of these issues or potential issues present already. We didn't find anything. We thought those issues and factors, if present in those other studies, would have made those studies much more appropriate to compare to our situation. We couldn't find anything that way. Generally, based on the few that staff did look at, it seemed to be a mixed bag. There were a couple studies that did say that there were some negative impacts, some that said there were positive impacts. Just a rule of thumb that we've experienced ourselves in other recreational issues, not stadiums per se. Trails is one that I've personally have studied. Generally, immediately adjacent residential development to a recreational facility can potentially have negative property values. Just off that immediately adjacent property, positive benefits. So again, that's just our gut feel. And I can say that I've done research in that regard on trails, but not at stadiums. Stadiums, it looked like it was a little bit of a mixture. No perfect or very good comparisons. So not a real clean answer on that one. Expansion of activities. The applicant is looking to have as many accessory uses allowed with the stadium and the sports complex as possible. And the city attorney at the Plan Commission had crafted a condition that would set forth that anything that was listed as an accessory use and shown on the site plans would be permitted. Anything that was not listed or shown on those site plans would have to come back for that further staff review. And if the staff saw problems with it, then we would bring it to Plan Commission or Council.
Mr. City Attorney?
Actually, it was kind of three categories. One, here's everything that's listed, and then if that use is depicted on the plans, in other words, it shows up on the plans, here's the stadium use, you know, here's the umbrella bar, etc., then that's a permitted use. If it's a listed use but isn't named or shown in an area on the plans, then we've got a unique, relatively efficient compared to normal zoning compliance permits they're called under the code, whereby the operator would submit a piece of paper to planning saying, this is what it is. This is what it sounds like. This is how large it is. It'll be operated for these hours on these particular days, et cetera, et cetera. And then the Department of City Development staff reviews that proposed use and applies all of these standards, the seven, I think they are, standards for a special use, in this case primarily being concerned with adverse impacts on adjoining property potential, and then grants or denies that particular use and conditions that use as necessary. And so the entire listing of pretty close to everything that was in the application is covered. And then the other category is, well, what if it wasn't listed before? It's an ever-changing world. There might be some unique entertainment, family-oriented game-type activity or the like that somebody thinks of that starts showing up maybe at the State Fair or in California somewhere, and the Rock decides it's appropriate for here. They use the same process, even though it's not listed here. So there's governmental regulation on each and every facet. Where is it going to be on the property? How long is it going to be operating? What's the nature of the operation? And if any limits to that operation, location-wise, noise-wise, or whatever are required, that'll be taken care of by city staff.
I told you it was the world's greatest municipal turn.
And it is a very quick turnaround. If there are no problems, we turn that around, no fee, and we can turn that down, turn it around in less than a week.
Okay. As
the city turns,
as long as we're on it, real quick, and I knew that tailgating was one of the 14 points in the question letter, and I was bugging staff last week when I had came up for air here and there. Here's what I need. I want to see what this is. And see how it was addressed in the summary, and somewhere close to 5:30 or 6 on Friday, I was told to look at the summary. So anyway, I looked at the summary, and I thought, three things jump out at me here. Actually, it was four, but staff is treating movies as a permitted use, understanding that movies will only occur in the stadium proper, period. So that's on the record, so that's a permitted use. Concerts and fireworks are separated out. Concerts and fireworks will be the subject of a required before building permit, a further amendment to the plan development district ordinance. And I have one proposed amendment that would go to paragraph 13 of the resolution, where it speaks in terms of what would have to be in that PDD amendment. It goes to hours of operation for various things. And I'm requesting that the council, if it's considering adopting this particular approval this evening, that immediately in paragraph 13 on page 14 of the agenda packet, immediately before the word, quote, prior, insert, and, quote, and noise regulations and any other matters reasonably related to a concert and or fireworks use. So in other words, plan development district ordinance amendment would come before the common council for its consideration, and the larger, obviously louder, et cetera, uses would be subject to that, and not just in a long list of uses. And a million just practical, real-life things come to mind. You have time limits for games. Well, if there's extra innings, the time limit is extended, et cetera, et cetera. Well, what if it goes into 22 innings and it's now 3:43 in the morning and there's fireworks after the game? That could be regulated under that PDD. So fireworks and concerts are on the side for now. And then the third one was tailgating. I know that tailgating is in the state of Wisconsin traffic code because I looked real quick on a key search Wisconsin statutes 2 weeks ago or whatever. In any event, I knew that staff was going to address it, and when I saw the summarizing of responses to the complaints, I saw that, well, it's going to be in this. Staff understands it's going to be in the southwestern parking lot with the berming, and the berming will take care of it. And my simple thought was, well, tailgating, I know that'd be buffered by an 8-foot berm, but depends who's playing. But if I'm inside that tailgating, you know. So with regard to tailgating, I thought that needed special review. It's not depicted on the plans. The plans do show deposit bins for hot coals and the like, which is another concern of tailgating. And it runs the gamut. Is somebody going to try and build a small bonfire? And just exactly how, in a parking lot, if that is the area, how would the general ordinance for open burning in Franklin apply? Are you going to have a 3-foot by 4-foot fire every 3 feet? Et cetera, et cetera. And then I also could picture friends at least 30 years ago where they'd pull up the pickup truck and get the portable stage out and put it up, and then out come four amplifiers, and then the instruments come out. So all that would be regulated, and it's understood to be under that accessory ancillary use paragraph 24, where staff gives specific conditions and the like to that. And also in the changing world, I understand that when it comes to tailgating, staff will put limited term approvals and conditions for review, and also for stop tailgating if some new grade adverse impact on adjoining property idea happens at a tailgate. So that's the whole story.
Thank you.
A couple more, I guess. Three more? Two more. Drainage. One of the conditions, again, from the Plan Commission is the preparation, completion, and approval by Engineering Department of a stormwater management plan that does look at the existing and proposed conditions, includes grading plans and those things. So we believe that the concerns will be addressed through that plan.
Okay.
And then the last one, safety concerns.
Let me just mention something before you do the safety concerns so you can address my concerns. As we're all aware, this is a landfill, and there's methane underneath, and there's various things in place to relieve the methane. Many years ago, there was a house fire. One of the neighbors had a fire, and it was before my time on the fire department, but it was credited to the methane causing the fire. Many years later, there was another incident where a house was filled with methane. I was on that call. I was one of the officers, and it was a very touch-and-go situation for a while until we were able to ventilate the house and get rid of the methane. But we hear every now and then in the news about structures blowing up because of methane. That methane that's in the ground is natural gas. It's the exact same methane that accumulates in homes and blows them up. One of my first calls in the fire department was a call to Greendale. An apartment building blew up, causing several injuries, including a fatality in Greendale. We just saw the explosion a couple weeks ago in New York where the apartment building blew up. It's the exact same methane, and we don't know exactly what this weight on it is going to do to its migrating. And so as we go through this, the DNR, that's one of the things that really needs to be concerned. We also, I shared a letter with the rest of the members from one of the residents, one of the neighbors in the area who is directly impacted by the methane in the area, and they're very concerned about that. And as we go through, we need to keep that in mind.
And we did contact
the attorney
with regard to the methane issue. Somewhere in the last 10 days, I did call and find who in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources was responsible for this particular landfill site, etc. Talked to the supervising engineer, who is that person. In short order, plans still needed to be submitted in final form, et cetera, but he's been working closely with Milwaukee County and has had a number of meetings with this applicant. And bottom line from him, and he would be the approving authority within DNR regulations, maybe one step up if he so requests, but he did not see that particular issue as being a problem. And he referenced Milwaukee County mapping, et cetera, as to the deposit locations, methane locations, and the like. I did call Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County has in their one of their capital budgets within their 10-year updating public facilities programs, the updating of the entirety, as I understand it, of the methane system at the Rock Complex site, and they're seriously addressing at this very point in time, moving up to the current point in time, the undertaking of that project, maybe not the whole thing, but anywhere near the areas. And finally, I understood from both the county person as well as the DNR person that they did not believe the actual methane piping, et cetera, was located underneath the stadium, if you will, or any of these new improvements. And that's just paraphrasing, but that's okay. What information I received. And the reaction was frankly, from the experts who deal with this, and it's their job to do so, it should not be a problem.
If in a 10 or 15 years, the piping, some of it or all of it needs to be replaced, does that fall to the county?
Okay. Under current structures, et cetera, yes.
Okay. So maybe a question for Jack. How long does piping like that generally last? What's its life expectancy?
Plastic piping, PVC piping, will last almost indefinitely, but if the landfill starts to move, they are somewhat flexible, but if it starts to move, they may have to be replaced.
Can that be monitored?
Yes, it can. It can be TV. It can be air pressure tested. There's a number of ways they can monitor that, but they actually can stick a television camera through it and look at it.
And do they do that standardly, or does that have to be?
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I know. Exactly. We've seen some pipes. You know, that's going.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Alderman? Alderman Schmidt.
Well, I have some softball questions since we have league officials here. Just relating to the league itself, you play, what is it, how many games in a season?
It's a 96-game schedule.
96 games. So half of those are home and away. Teams travel by bus?
Everybody travels by bus, yes, sir.
And the games usually to visit a city for, what, two or three games?
We play all three-game series.
All three games.
All three-game series, which means sometimes there'll be two nights of hotel in the town. Some nights there's three nights of hotels that are in the town. The local teams pay the hotel bills, set up their hotel deals, and then they would pay for the for all the visiting teams that come into town.
And are these games primarily weekends, or do they have weeknight games?
We play 96 games in about 110 days. So you're playing on just about every day, but most of the times, most of our off days are on Mondays, and then we have a four-day all-star break. And we start right around mid to late May, right around May 20th, normally, give or take a few days, and go to Labor Day, give or take a few days, and then playoffs happen after that.
And what are the starting times of your games?
They vary from town to town. Some people start them at 6:35 for the most part. Some start at 7:05 on the weeknights, and sometimes on Saturdays. They move their Saturdays and Sundays. They may move up sometimes Sundays. You're playing afternoon games. Doubleheaders are normally scheduled at least an hour to an hour and a half earlier.
You do have a doubleheader scheduled?
Indeed, no, we don't have it scheduled, but that's for makeups, you know, rainouts and the makeup games, so you get to as close to 96 games as you possibly can. And obviously you want to have as many openings as you can, and that's why our league now is really stressing the teams to use the artificial turf for so they can get the games in and then also make their facilities more multi-use.
And about what time do the teams arrive at the ballpark? They have pregame warm-ups and stuff?
Oh, yes, sir. The home teams will probably be – the kids will start showing up at the ballpark about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And normally home team batting practice starts around 4:30, and then the visiting teams will roll in between 3:30 and 4 every day. And the kids are there as long as it takes to play the games and go through everything. So especially your home kids, if people think that baseball players, professional baseball players, even at any level, are going out there for just a game, they're sadly mistaken. It's a good 8-hour day that a lot of these kids are putting in. So they work hard at it.
Question, as we got you here, and I'm guessing you probably have a few other things to do given that you run a whole league. And I just want to let you know I'm not missing the point. You've come up here because you I think both of you, John, is second year appearance. Do you think this is not only good for Franklin, you really think this is good for the Frontier League? I mean, last time I checked, it's okay to make money in America.
Yes, it's not a dirty word.
It's sort of applauded in some areas. And in Franklin, it's one of those areas where free enterprise is really applauded. Can you kind of describe how the nonprofit groups work out, or how they benefit from these stadiums, like the Lions Club, the Scouts,
the
Historical Society? Not because Doug's up here. Library. What am I missing? There's a couple thousand things. St. Martin's Fair. We have all those things. I've read the material, and it's this sort of rhetorical question, but I think it's a very important question because it goes back to what you said. This isn't just baseball. This is family entertainment, and it's a thing that's like a magnet for bringing the whole community together. But could you kind of elaborate on that?
I'll be happy to, and then I'll pass over to Josh so they can talk about what they actually do in Joliet. Throughout the years, and even when I ran teams back in the 80s, and I used to be the general manager of the Chattanooga Lookouts many years ago, and we used to use like the local band boosters, the athletic boosters from high schools, and there's a lot of the nonprofits that get involved in fundraising. The teams will do a lot of that type of stuff. All the teams around the league do this. Working with the high schools and fundraising for them, a lot of the youth organizations. Any way that they can work with them, they'll work with them. For example, is it the Optimus, I guess, that do the eyeglasses and stuff? Is that the Lions? And so you see a lot of collection-type things like that and nights where people can do different things and have different fundraisers at the ballpark. And not necessarily always in conjunction with the game. Perhaps it's a night away from a game and they might have a concert, they might have a car show, they might have a flea market, they might have something during the day. You never know. There's corporate outings and I know I've seen them doing kickball tournaments on the field and softball and just being involved in every which way they can. A lot of 5K runs, you know, things like that you'll see that are charitable and might finish their race in the stadium. that kind of a thing. So there's a lot of ways that it can be involved into the that it can be integrated into the community. Now then, I'll let Josh say what they do in Joliet.
Yeah, because I think it's the press so far, not John, I'm pointing at John here. It's just talked about a baseball stadium, like it's just, you know, it's a bunch of bricks and that's it. And this really, my interest has to do with building a center of the community where the whole community is going to come together and families are going to participate at a reasonable price.
Yeah, and as I mentioned last week, this baseball stadiums are an avenue for not only local nonprofits, but local businesses to advertise and produce more business for their business. But to directly answer your question about some of the fundraising nonprofits, for instance, our fundraising opportunities include where groups, nonprofits, go out and sell our tickets on our behalf, and we donate a large percentage of those ticket proceeds back to them. Typically what happens is a group such as a local Little League will say, well, we'll take 500 tickets. They go out and resell those tickets and take the excess. So they'd be selling $10 tickets. We donate five of that $10 to them. Last year in Joliet, we donated over $100,000 back to the community through our organization. This year, I've created an actual nonprofit called Slammers Charities, where our season ticket holders, local corporations, can actually donate money into our charitable program, which will then, in turn, take those proceeds and distribute them to worthwhile causes and nonprofits. So we expect that $100,000 to really grow over time. And also, it provides, for instance, our season ticket holders can donate their tickets, which we then turn around and donate to local charities or underprivileged children so they can have access to the stadium. Even though minor league baseball is an extremely affordable avenue for families, it's still not affordable for everyone. So there is really no barrier to entry at the end of the day. Someone will be able to get tickets through the nonprofit or through the fundraising. We also hold 50-50 raffles during the game for nonprofits, so that's literally pass the hat for 50-50. Massive amounts of money go through that to local charities. And once again, but for the stadium, those opportunities don't exist. But for the stadium, we wouldn't be there to donate $100,000 back to the community last year in Joliet. So I see similar things happening here. Lastly, baseball buddies, kids will show up with programs. They'll sell our programs to our fans and keep all the proceeds. So once again, another avenue for local charities, local little leagues to really raise money, and just improve their programs in general.
Okay. I'll just, my last night. Some of the emails I'm getting, it's mostly driven on the financing piece. I mean, people are like vehemently no public financing at all. But then in some of these emails I'm getting, it's going, come on, this is just Zimmerman's hobby. You know, he really doesn't care about the community. It's this is just about making a buck. Can I ask you to maybe address that?
Yeah, you bet. So if I had $10.5 million to spend on something, it wouldn't be on a landfill. I mean, for anybody that understands business, like, that is a bad investment. So obviously there is something else going on with me, and I tip my hat to my wife on that. She's in my ear about this all the time. Do I love baseball? Absolutely. Do I think it'd be fun? Absolutely. But it, frankly, would be a lot easier to do this somewhere else in another city. What else is going to happen with this landfill? You know, I live four blocks away. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you can... It needs to be run like a business, though. I'm a big believer in that. Every business I've got, I run like a business because my name's on it, and I think the last thing I want to do is, you know, walk away from this thing for 4 years from now and say, now it's your problem. So... of course, there's a business side of me to this as well. But
well, you know, on a personal note, I've watched you build what you have over there, and I've interacted with the people that have come to your facility, and I mean, I still can't get over the quality of the facility that you built there. And people don't talk about it's a great place to play a game. They're saying, I mean, the ball players said, this is the best place ever to play ball. And whether you have a beer or a soda or whatever, you know, the umbrella bar and the waterfalls and the deck and overlooking Whitnall Park. What I get as the mayor is, thank you, Mayor, for pulling that off. How in the world did you ever get this? Well, it was easy, you know. I just came up with it. What you've brought to this community, and that wasn't cheap.
No, thank you. My dad said it this way to me, and this is true for you guys too. I mean, he said it. It is lonely at the top.
Yeah. Don't I know?
Yeah. Right. that's what it is, right? People just don't. Whatever.
Well, I'm gonna give one statement here, and obviously the aldermen can do what they want to do. But I've really had a very great time. It's been a terrific privilege, honor being the mayor, and I got to get involved in the negotiations for Northwestern Mutual Life, bringing two of their largest facilities to this area. Could have built anywhere in the world. They chose to build in Franklin. And I got to be a part of that negotiations. Thank God I had the world's greatest negotiator sitting next to me who actually did all the work. And then this group called Wheaton Franciscan, the Pope kind of runs their hospitals and stuff. They said, what do you think about coming to Franklin? Are you kidding? Absolutely. How do we do this? And some of the aldermen know the story here. I had to... We got into the negotiations, and they said, well, we don't want to pay any taxes. And I said, maybe we can show you another parcel because you're not going to build that in the TIF district. And I was crying when I was saying it because this was going to bring an emergency room to our area. And so instead of a kid having to take 45 minutes on maybe an ambulance to get to St. Luke's and then get booked in and maybe save their lives, this is now 5 minutes away, and you're already seeing that it's becoming a regional medical clinic. Then we had our first hotel that came in, Staybridge Suites, first hotel in Franklin. Nothing but rave reviews. Nothing but rave reviews about Wheaton Franciscan. Nothing but rave reviews about Northwestern Mutual. Sendix came in. Terrific, fantastic, great. And the other entity I get the most compliments about is the Rock Sports Complex. And I'm not making it up. This is what I get. And when I talk to, you heard tonight that I was the chairman of the mayors and village presidents from Milwaukee County. And I sit there with Mayor Barrett and the county executive. I've had Scott Walker come in a few times. They just rave about the Rock Sports Complex. So... if you're picking up that I'm a supporter of this facility, you'd be right. And Franklin has had some proposals in the past where we let them slip. We let them go by. And I think you're going to, we've got the whole public financing piece. But, you had a 6-0 vote out of your plan commission for this. That's Jack Bennett, that's Randy Ritter, with conditions. People have sat on the plan commission for many years, and I'm just going to advocate as much as I possibly can to you that I think that this is going to be fantastic for the city of Franklin. I think you're going to get so much marketing out of this facility. It's going to go Franklin, 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 and you're going to hear... it's going to be all good. It's going to be family, hot dogs, baseball, USA in Franklin, Wisconsin. So, at the sake of being long-winded, and I can't urge you enough to support the resolution that's in front of me.
So what is the resolution of Chelsea's additions to it?
Mr. Weslow?
Only on page 14 on the agenda packet, paragraph 13.
You mentioned 14, but there's...
page 17.
17, okay.
Well, maybe you have a council member packet. My numbers are lower. It's paragraph 13 of the proposed special use resolution. I'll read it the way it reads right now.
The applicant shall obtain approval of a plan development district ordinance amendment for the revision to the athletic field lighting curfew, hours of operation for the baseball stadium, and events such as fireworks and concerts, comma, building height, comma, and signage requirements, comma, prior to the issuance of a building permit. When I first read that after staff, I got it from staff Friday night, I thought, all right, well, what if they just don't do it? It doesn't read that way. What if they choose not to extend the current hours, which I believe end at 10:30? They just don't do it. But the way staff wrote it, they shall apply for a PDD amendment. So that's in there. But with regard to fireworks and concerts, it speaks only in terms of hours of operation. So what I suggest be added is right before the last phrase there, prior to the issuance of a building permit, that the following language be added in, and that would be, quote, and noise regulations and any other matters reasonably related to a concert and slash or fireworks use, comma, close quote. So concerts and fireworks will have special regs under a PDD amendment. They don't happen until if and when a PDD amendment is read.
Could you fashion a motion?
A motion to approve a resolution imposing conditions and restrictions for the approval of a special use for an outdoor minor league professional baseball stadium use upon property located at 7900 West Crystal Ridge Drive, the Rock Sports Complex LLC applicant, with paragraph 13 to include the following amendment, colon, immediately before, quote, prior, close quote, insert, quote, and noise regulations and any other matters reasonably related to a concert and slash or fireworks use, comma, close quote, period.
Is there a motion in effect?
With that addition, I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. If there's no objection, I'd like the vote to be recorded as unanimous. Seeing no objection, let the vote be recorded as unanimous. Thank you very much, sir, for coming up here.
Thank you, folks. So much.
Thank you for visiting our town. Still got a ways to go here.
And we're going to be here a while.
Okay, item two, donation from Walmart Foundation, about $2,000 to the police department.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Agreement for mutual assistance among Milwaukee County Fire Department to provide for potentially more rapid response times than areas of adjoining communities in Milwaukee County.
So moved.
Mayor.
There's a second.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Liberto?
The fire chief is recommending a motion to table until such time as determined by staff.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay.
I'll withdraw my second.
Is there a motion to a table?
So moved.
Second.
What was the piece, Mr. Liberto?
Pardon? Motion to table until such time as determined by staff.
Is that your motion, Alderman?
Yes, that's correct.
And Alderman Dander?
Yes.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. You have a report on uses of salt, geomelt, overtime relative. Questions? Mr. Bennett, isn't it? Bennett?
I think so, yes. We've always had a rather conservative approach to our salt usage. Years ago, when we buy salt under the state contract, and years ago, we received a 5% discount if we paid for the next year's salt before the end of the year. So the council budgeted 2 years of salt in 1 year so we could take advantage of the 5% discount. Not too long after that, the discount was discontinued, but we've always purchased and paid for next year's salt the year before. Hasn't really meant too much to us up until this year. We were one of the few communities that really didn't have a salt shortage. We had bought and paid for all the salt that we've used, and we still got about 1,100 ton left in our salt shed. But we did use more salt. I consulted with the mayor, I don't know how many times, and the mayor wouldn't tell me what to do. He just said, make the road safe, and which I respected him. So anyway, what we would still recommend to do is that we purchase the makeup salt, which would be 1,450 tons this year from the next bid. And we, as part of our bids, we have a reserve in our bid of 25%. So whatever we request in salt, we can take 25% more at that price, and only 25% more. Well, since we're getting the salt for $52.49, and we've called the salt people, and they said because it was all over the country, a bad winter, they expect the salt price to go up to $58 a ton. So it makes sense for us to buy the reserve. Now, we have the money in the budget to do that, so I'm not requesting any additional funds to buy the reserve. We actually probably have enough money in the budget to buy the 1,450 ton, but we're using what we always consider next year. So my recommendation is you allow us to purchase the reserve salt out of this year's budget, and we aren't going to buy the 1,450 ton until late in the year. But I will get an email probably the last year I got it on April 2nd, the email from the state giving me 2 weeks to tell them how much salt I want for the city. So I would like to authorize the purchase of the reserve salt and the purchase of 3,350 ton under the new contract. We'll take 1,450 this year, and we'll pay for the 1,900 ton next year.
Mr. Liberto?
At the end of the motion, as it's suggested in the council action sheet, I would suggest adding the words using appropriation unit and contingency appropriations as required. Then you have budget authority for each of those for the authorization you'd make. As what came up in the last council meeting, then what staff would anticipate is when the audit comes through in May and identifies that we have a significant amount of money returning to the fund balance from a very positive year last year, we would bring a budget modification for it at that time to use that fund balance left over from last year to fund that added salt, which is what we always do, and that would reinstate the contingency appropriation available for the remainder of the year. But that lets you make the appropriation now, or make the authorization now, have sufficient appropriations, and it's funded without using any new tax dollars this year, without having to tax more for next year, because we'll use available fund balance from our good year and good management last year.
Alderman Schmidt?
I would make that motion as amended.
I'll second it.
Okay. Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion? Only that Jack's correct. Every time he called me, he'd say, so how much salt should I put down? I said, just make sure that the city's safe. All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, five ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Item 5, request Wisconsin Department of Transportation for the city to maintain the bike lane marking and signing relative to reconstruction of South 27th Street.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, the state will do the pavement marking, and we do suggest on South 27th Street to mark the bike trail. It makes it much safer for the people that are using it. And they'll mark it initially. They'll use a hot fiberglass marking, so it'll last for quite a while. But they always do make the cities responsible for bike trail marking and signage maintenance. Don't expect to be much signing maintenance immediately, but normally every 2 years we do pavement marking, and it costs about 10 cents a foot. And we got about 2 miles, so it's going to be about $1,000 every 2 years to mark this. But we do have money in the budget for this, and be a slight increase to cover this.
Alderman Mayor?
would it do any good for somebody to table this until such time that the state DOT opens up the sidewalks on Highway 100?
We're working on that. I just got another call. I would suggest you approve that and we handle that separately.
Okay, as long as you handle it.
I'll keep working on
before it. Before June 6th, it's okay. Got to be done?
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you just make the motion?
I'll make the motion to approve it, yes.
Second?
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion.
Do we have to do anything period. With Jerry's memo?
Just because he's here.
Is he still here?
Jerry's the one that used all the salt. I didn't use it.
But this is overtime, right?
Yeah, Jerry used all the salt.
Yeah.
It's all his fault. Motion for overtime.
Yeah, it's
all his fault that the roads are real good, too.
Did you need anything with the memo?
The overtime?
No, it's just more for information. We okay. will hold the overtime as low as we can get it. If you know, we may only be 21,000 over if we don't have a bad November and December, or a windstorm, or some other things that we've got to be out on overtime. But we will minimize the overtime for the rest of the year. But you can realize, and every storm seemed to be on a weekend or holiday. Just every time it seemed to be a weekend or holiday. And that's the only thing that really costs us extra, because we got our guys on staff, except for holiday. And holidays are double time. Sundays are double time. And
you said this is the worst winter you've had in 45 years, right?
I think so.
You can't
I mean,
leave
not the most snow.
You can't leave on this note, then. You've got to go through another winter.
No.
Just to...
I was going to call you Alderman because I can't see the glasses. But still Mr. LeBert.
When staff brings back the budget modification relative to the salt, well, salt will investigate and look at whether or not we should add some of those fund balance appropriations to reinstate this so that they don't run into emergency shortages when we get into next November and December. So we'll bring back a recommendation on this at the same time.
Yeah. Okay, item six, amendment to the emergency notification system service agreement with Inspiron Logistics.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. For the record, Alderman Mayer stepped out for a moment, so we have four aldermen here. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, four ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Licenses and permits.
Okay, we have Strusel approved with letter. Ruth approved. Wilson approved.
Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jack. That's the motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, four ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Bills, vouchers, Ball, you know, read the motions. You expect me to read it on my last slide?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to read into the record the motions. Motion approving net general checking account city vouchers in the range is number 151548 through 151687 in the amount of $833,846.10 dated March 21, 2014 through March 27th, 2014.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Alderman Mayer has returned. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Dandrea?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderman Taylor?
Aye.
Alderman Skronsky?
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt?
Aye.
Five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Next motion.
Motion approving net general checking account city voucher number 151689 in the amount of $21,193.94 dated March 31, 2014.
So
and just for the record, this is the item that you examined last period related to the repair of a motor on one of the city's snowplows.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman
Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman
Dander. Aye.
Five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Do you have another motion for us?
I do indeed.
Thank you very much.
Motion approving the net payroll dated April 4th, 2014, estimated at $332,000, and payments of the various payroll deductions estimated at $209,000, plus any city matching payments where required.
So moved.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Dandrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Skaronski.
Aye.
Five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Anything else?
And finally, one last motion, Your Honor, if I'm not abusing the privilege.
Careful.
Motion approving property tax settlements in the ranges of number 13270 in the amount of $1,500, dated March 27th, 2014.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skaronski.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman
Dandrea. Aye.
Five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Before you get to the motion to adjourn, I have one last thing to say. And that's that I know Ray Lenz, I know Susan Mayer, I know Janet Evans, I know Steve Taylor, I know Steve Olson, that's his name, right?
Mm-hmm. Kristen.
And I think John Nelson, Kristen Wilhelm, for the record, it is my professional opinion as a former human resources manager that all the people that are running for office are all extremely intelligent. I think all of them care a great deal about the city of Franklin, and I think they will continue to do a great job for the city, no matter who gets in. And I just want to say the other thing is that the moment that the elections are final, whoever the mayor is going to be, I plan on working with them as quickly as possible and to make this the smoothest possible transition that can occur. And I wish them only luck, because that's what's really in the best interest of the city of Franklin. So good luck to all of you.
Yep. Wish you well. And good luck.
Second.
I would one further comment. I would like to take this opportunity to thank the mayor for having given me the privilege of having served on this common council with him for the past 4 years. It's been a learning experience and a valuable experience in relationship to all the issues facing the city, and having your direction to work under.
Thank you very much, Alden. All right, let's get out of here. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, five ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Thank you all.